The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
You'll know both of my next guests from TV and radio. Bernard O'Shea is a broadcaster and comedian and star of Bridget and Eamon. And you'll have seen him in Dancing with the Stars. And he's often found on screen partying with his good pal and mine, Marty Morrissey. And Dermot Whelan is also a broadcaster and comedian. And you'll know him from Republic of Telly and Today FM. And they're good friends and they're good buddies. And they share something in common. And I suppose, lads, I'll begin with you, Bernard. It's something that we all probably need at this point in time, and that's some mindfulness, some space, some spirituality, something to just get us away from, you know, all our worrying thoughts and all our anxiety. You turned 40 last year, and you found yourself hurtling towards a midlife crisis, which you called the manopause, and you wrote a book about it. Are you getting over all that anxiety, Bernard?
No, it's the simple answer. No, like so many people, everyone, like, you know, I thought I was unique, this unique little unicorn that was anxious about life and things and kids and bills and mortgages, and I'm a self-employed person. So this lockdown is having an extreme effect, of course, on me and other people like me. And, you know, so, but you realize then you talk to somebody in the real world and you realize everyone has these same, I suppose, anxious problems. You know, like the way I think about it was, if you look at like a biggish purchase, like say you want to change your car. So I'll just read a little bit quickly from the book. If I think about buying a new car, then I'll think about the cost. Then I'll think about the person selling it to me. Then I can't afford it. Then they'll say, well, why are you wasting my time? Then I'll have no answer. I'll have to apologize. Then I'll have to buy the car on credit. Then I can't find the money each month to pay for the car. Then I'll start thinking my family's going to go hungry while a new car sits out in the driveway and we can't even eat. Then I'll have to go back to the man who sold it to me and he'll buy it back off me for half price. Then he'll tell everybody he knows that my family is starving and we have to give back the car. Then I'll be a laughing stock. My pride will be hurt. My ego will be hurt. My family's starving. My wife will be on the phone talking to her friends crying her heart out. It will end up in social media. My mother will be calling me crying as well. I'll eventually have to move out of the house because I can't be trusted with anyone. I'll be pictured living beside a train station, and eventually I'll contact rabies. 20 seconds ago I was just thinking about changing the car. And
now, these are all that this what you said there is just as you sit down, these were the sort of thoughts racing through your head at any given time of the day. Shit, that would drive anybody bonkers.
About anything.
Yeah.
It could be about, you know, I was laughing to myself yesterday. I was in the shop and was buying underarm roll thing, antiperspirant. And I said, God, I should buy the cheap one. What if, because I've no work. So what if everyone...
So you're a worrier, Bernard.
Oh, always have been, and always been told, and, you know, God bless the people who have worked with me, Keith and Jen and Lottie, you know, because I would just worry about everything. I always feel I'm being attacked or someone's going to come after me. And you realize that, you know, everyone has these thoughts. Everyone has these feelings. Everyone, you know, I suppose
has it been exacerbated over the last year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I went for my walk. I'm a very, very lucky person. I have a house that I have a mortgage on it, but I have a house and I live near the Phoenix Park. And I bump into people and it's mostly, you're a man with Marty, right? So it's like, but you get talking, small talk with people, and everyone's finding this lockdown particularly hard. Very hard.
But Bernard, I wonder, does it come with the territory of being a comedian? Are you more susceptible to anxiety and mental anguish as a comedian, where, you know, you're constantly having to think of original material and it's always going around in your head and you're worrying that when you go on stage people are not going to laugh at your jokes and you have to be chirpy and you have to be, you know, bubbly when you're on stage? Obviously that sort of high obviously is balanced out with a lot of lows.
Yeah, kind of. Now, the only thing I will say, when you are on a stage in the last couple of years, they're there to see you, which is a fantastic, you know, starting point. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to win anyone over, you know, whereas in the clubs, when you're starting off, that's where the groundwork's put in. You have to try and win people over and not win people over, but you have to be, it's almost very Coliseum like. Whereas, you know, if you're in a hotel room and there's a couple of hundred people there, it's much easier because they like what you do. They're into what you do. There will always be people that hate you, you know, and, you know, and now they have a vehicle where they can use on Twitter or on social media. And, you know, that's fine too. But when you're in a room, actually, that's where I feel safest on a stage, you know. But the thing for me was that I was so skeptical of mindfulness. I would every time I'd hear the word, or we'd even go in to talk about it on our show at the time, we'd be like, oh, here we go again. And when if I heard happiness, the word happiness, it would do my in head in. It really would. Are you happy? Because I grew up in Ireland. I bet you're happy now. But I was so skeptical of mindfulness because I always thought of like this kind of like I'd be, you know, incense and hugging each other and you know blaming your parents or whatever it was, or like you know kind of running naked in fields. I don't know. I'm a big, I suppose, ignorant of it. You know, but it was only when I decided it was mass. That's what I decided mindfulness was. I said that's mass. Do you know what I mean? That's what, like, you know, you go for an hour a week and you think about other things. And I went back with an open mind, a genuine open mind. And, you know, I just found it odd because I wanted it to give me all the answers. I wanted this higher power to come down and say, you're all right now. You'll get over this lockdown. You'll get over this. You'll be fine. And it didn't come. And somebody came up to me one day when I went back and said, what are you doing here? You know, which was fair enough. And I told her and she said, Mo, but what are you doing here? And I said, I'm here at mass. And she said, are you doing a skit? Now, a skit would be something my father would say years ago. Like, you know, he was from a little place outside Dublin called Kerry. And he'd go, are you doing a skit? You know, like, and I said, no, I'm not doing any skits. I'm just here. And I didn't get anything from it. And
but it wasn't anything. It wasn't anything new to you, Bernard, because you grew up as an altar boy, mass goer, traditional, I suppose, typical 80s Irish child in rural Ireland.
Yeah, and I loved all that. You know, like I always say, I probably had the worst upbringing for a comedian ever because I had a fantastic. I loved it. You know, it was idyllic. You know, you know. Give us a car out the front and a better road, and it's basically House in the Prairie.
So did you find your form of mindfulness or solace in the church, in going back to mass, whether you believed or whether but by just spending that half hour in silence inside once a week, did you find it helped you?
Yes and no. I found it helpful in as much as that. I loved the bit when they said, now think about people who have gone in your past. Felt quite emotional because I went, oh my God, it's like, what a great, great idea. But they don't never give you enough time, you know. And I came out thinking, well, maybe that's it. Maybe I've guilt and classic, you know. And it was only when during the third lockdown, not the second lockdown, I was coming home in the car and I heard Dermot Whelan, who does his show with Dermot and Dave, and he was the host of Republic of Telly. I heard him talk about mindfulness. I went, oh God, here we go again now. Mm. And he was talking about meditation. And I he was very serious, but I was expecting a punchline or a gag or they were doing something fun with it. And then I got home and that night I Googled him and I saw he was this meditation master, this mindfulness master. And I kind of went, that's so odd and funny. And I let it go for a couple of months. And then eventually, like, you know, the anxiousness, the fear I'm going to be attacked, the whole, all comes back again and you can't enjoy yourself. And I said, maybe I'll just give him a buzz. And when the restrictions were lifted, I went in and met him. And
Dermot, what happened next?
Well, I knew the world was in a strange place when comedians start asking other comedians to help with their mental wellness. But yeah, it was a real pleasure to sit down with Bernard. And I suppose he had some questions. I think the first question, Bernard, you asked me was, is mass mindfulness? And, you know, there's a kind of a lot to unpack there, but I suppose not directly, but I think what I was trying to say to Bernard was, and maybe it's something that we have lost a lot of over time, you know, since people maybe drifted away from going to mass every week, like they might've done when they were children. But it's that setting aside of time, whether it's 5 minutes in the day or an hour on a Sunday, you know, to sit with yourself and maybe a sense that there's something bigger than yourself, you know, and whether that's for people a sense that there is a God or maybe it's just deeper layers of yourself. So I suppose that's kind of what I shared with Bernard. And obviously as comedians, a lot of us tend to have been altar boys in our past because I guess mass was the only show in town. It was the only stage.
But it's interesting. I know. Yeah. Yeah. It was a stage to show off maybe by being. So could you identify with a lot of what Bernard's talking about there, Dermot, in terms of your mind racing and that it needs just to be stopped with something, be it mindfulness or mass? Is mass like, is it mindfulness with church bells on?
Well, you know, mass creates an environment, I suppose, for you to sit down in relative silence and maybe detach from a lot of the things that may be whirring around your head. But, you know, as a meditation teacher, you know, my main goal is to debunk a lot of the myths around meditation, the same ones that Bernard was just talking about there, you know, the incense, the crystals. You know, it annoys me whenever I see supposedly spiritual people on, say, the likes of Instagram or Facebook, they're always wearing white flowy clothes, you know, and if we, you know, as Irish people, we can't wear them, you know, if we... If we dress like these spiritual Californian types in these sort of, you know, white flowy clothes, we either look like we're in our pajamas or we've escaped from an institution. So,
well, how do you practice, you know, mindfulness, Dermot, on a daily basis? Does it take a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of time? And what are the net results of it for you?
Well, could I answer that? Is that all right, Dermot?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go for it, Bernard.
Because when I sat down, again, very highly skeptical of it, and 16 seconds... of a breathing exercise, which Dermot said, you know, breathe in for 4 seconds, hold it for 4 seconds and release it. And he said, congratulations, you've just meditated. And I was like, okay, really? I was just sitting on a plastic chair. I was like going, do I not get in the lotus position and, you know, have a flame go out the back of my head? He's like, no, that's it. And to be honest with you, that simple 16 seconds, when everybody has days that you kind of go, I'm going to lose it here, or I just can't take any more of this S1T. That simple, simple little thing, whether I found out I was grieving very heavily over something, but that simple, simple thing of just breathing in for 4 seconds, holding it and releasing it, kind of changed. I would go as far as say it kind of changed my life. It made me turn down another avenue. I'm not saying I'm some guru, but Dermot can probably explain as to why it works. But I don't second guess the workings of it anymore. I just do it. And like, it's amazing what that little breathing exercise can do. You could be listening to me right now going, I hate that, Bella. And you know what? Breathe in for 4 seconds, hold it and release it. And it's amazing what that can do.
That'd be great advice, Damien, for people on Twitter, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if everybody was able to take a breath before they commented. If I could just break it down, because I know when I started to get into this, I had all the same preconceptions, you know, and as a stand-up comic, you know, there's nobody more cynical in life generally as a stand-up. So I had a lot of preconceived notions about it. So, and I wish someone had explained it to me in simpler terms before I had to read 10 books on the subject, some of which were written thousands of years ago. So if this makes it any easier for people to get their head around, because the terms mindfulness and meditation can be confusing and it's hard to tell the difference between the two. So in the simplest way, mindfulness is anything, any activity that brings you into the present moment. Now, I know the term present moment sounds quite Oprah-esque to a lot of people, and it can be a bit of a turnoff. But all that means is that when we're in the present moment, we're not in the past worrying about stuff that we did or that was done to us, or we're not in the future worrying about things that might happen. When we're in the present moment, it's very, very hard. In fact, it's impossible for your brain to be anxious or to be fearful, you know, or be worried about stuff that's happened to you. So if we can introduce any activity, whether that's playing an instrument or playing with your young child or, you know, wrestling with your puppy or your cat or any activity that pulls you into that present moment, it's going to give your brain a break from those whirling thoughts. And meditation is essentially a form of mindfulness. It's an activity where you focus your attention on one thing, say, for instance, your breath. So meditation is focusing your mind on your breath. And when your mind wanders off, which it will, because that's what minds do, you just realize that it's wandered and you bring it back to your breath. So your attention might wander 50 or 100 or 200 times in a 5-minute meditation where you're just trying to focus on your breath. And people experience this and they go, oh my God, I'm thinking about how itchy my leg is. I'm thinking about how I never rang Deirdre. I'm thinking about I never sent that email. And they think because they're having those thoughts that they're doing it wrong or there's something necessarily wrong with their brain. And that's not the case. All we're doing in an exercise like meditation is trying to focus our mind on one thing. So it could be your breath, or it could be a word or a phrase, or it could be a candle or a piece of music. And whenever your mind wanders, which it will, because our minds are crazy puppies, you just go, oh, I'm not thinking about my breath anymore, and you bring it back. And there's amazing science around why this stuff works, because it's not just a nice feeling or I'm more relaxed now. There is so much science that has emerged over the last 10 years in particular that is showing people that this not only makes us feel better, but it is literally changing the shape of your brain, even as a beginner meditator.
How many thoughts do we have in a day?
You will have between 60 and 80,000 thoughts a day. So, you know, it's another myth that we're meant to, when we meditate or get relaxed or feel mindful, that we're meant to, like some monk or Mr. Miyagi in The Karate Kid, suddenly clear our mind of all thoughts. And we're not going to do that. In fact, we don't want to. You know, thoughts are good. They're keeping us alive. If we don't have thoughts, we're dead. So,
Like the last year, I keep going back to the last year. But the last year has changed all our lives for many different reasons. And a lot of people are probably having a little more difficulty sleeping at night, whether they're worried or the change of routine. And people are having mad dreams and nightmares and all of that. Maybe people listening to us now are quietly smiling and nodding at that notion. And maybe other people are fine. But is that one of the benefits of meditation and mindfulness, that we have a good night's sleep?
Well, for me, it definitely was. Absolutely, 100% definitely was, because I was not sleeping for 2 years, you know, just not sleeping. And throw in a dance competition and I couldn't dance.
Well, and was that down to worry or what?
Everything. Get 1,000 likes or 1,000 people saying you're great and one person hates you and, oh, Jesus, or you could, you know, you get a flat tire. Oh, you know, I've said in the late nature, a man was drying, a very, very nice fella, drying his appurtenance with a hairdryer, drive me mental, you know, and everything. And just like a hamster wheel flying. And then you don't sleep on top of that and you're a ticking time bomb, you know. And then other things in life as well. And so my major thing was to kind of do that breathing exercise. And then Dermot sent me on a kind of a more longer 10-minute thing. Now, I haven't gone further than that 10 minutes. But I remember the first time I did it properly, I fell asleep. And my wife came in and said, listen, can you come down? Because I have a meeting. I have to take a meeting. And I had slept for 5 hours. You know, and that night I slept again. And it was, and we've, you know, we do that classic bed hopping thing. We've three small kids and, you know, you end up with a foot in your head some mornings and, one, you know, they go all over the place. But yeah, it definitely helps my sleep, you know, just that little bit of meditation, that little bit of breathing.
Yeah.
Particularly
that's
before
what the science is telling us. I mean, there's a great study that I try and tell people about, because it really describes what's happening in the brain and shows that it isn't just all, you know, woo-woo crystal stuff. You know, there was a study done in 2012 from Harvard with the Massachusetts General Hospital. And what they got was, they got 16 people and they got them to meditate, never meditated before. And they did it for less than half an hour a day for 8 weeks. All right. So less than 2 months. And they scanned their brains through the whole process. But what they found at the end really shocked them, because obviously they expected to find the things that they knew meditation did, like lowered blood pressure, lowered heart rate, lowered stress hormones. But when they looked at the scans of their brains, they found that the amygdala, the part of our brain that's responsible for angry, fearful, anxious thinking, that had actually shrunk in size in less than 2 months. In these beginners' brains, the fear centers in their brains had shrunk. And conversely, parts of their brain that are responsible for logical thinking and self-awareness and memory, those had actually strengthened and grown in a lot of cases, was literally more gray matter. So it literally physically changes the shape of our brain. And that's measurable, you know, in scientific studies. So what's happening, you know, when you talk about sleep, Damien, is, and that's such an issue for people and has been for the last year or so, and people definitely know what you're talking about there. if you think about it, our stress response is being triggered a lot more, whether that's news reports or conversations. Everyone seems to be talking about COVID and vaccines and all these kinds of things. So we're in a naturally heightened state of anxiety anyway. So that amygdala, the part of our brain, is more active than usual. And what happens in that when it is active is that we send out a lot of stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol into our system. And what's happening is that because of the nature of the times we live in, people are arriving to bedtime with a lot of this stuff still in their system. And the natural things that maybe they would have done normally, yeah, even a commute home from work, you know, would have lowered those stress hormones. So when we have a small technique like a guided meditation or a breathing exercise, what we're doing is we're saying to our brain, okay, look, we need to lower these stress hormones now so we can prepare for sleep. So your brain goes, normally, you know, if you're stressed out, it'll go, okay, I can see you have a high level of cortisol in your system at the moment. So there's obviously a threat in our environment. So I'm going to let you go to sleep for 2 or 3 hours, but I'm going to wake you up then because I need you alert for this threat. So when we introduce an exercise like this, like a breathing exercise, it's a very simple technique. What happens is we lower the stress levels of hormones in our system. Our body goes, oh, I know this. You're nice and relaxed. This is the rest and digest state. So you're ready for sleep now. You can have a full night's sleep. And that's like very, very simplified explanation as to why a lot of us might be feeling challenges at present, right, with our sleep.
That's really interesting. Listen, before both of you go, Bernard, like, churches are closed at the moment, but when they do reopen, will you be tiptoeing back in for your weekly half hour of solace? Depending on the priest, you could go for an hour, or you could go for 20 minutes or whatever church you decide to go to. But will you continue with that routine?
No, I didn't. I kind of did it 3 or 4 times and I just felt that, you know, that I was kind of, I suppose, taking up time that I didn't feel necessary when I got the technique basically of Dermot about just, you know, a little bit of time to yourself, breathe, that kind of that basically kind of fulfilled that part of it in me, you know. And that was like, you know, that kind of like just being able to calm. Now don't get me wrong, I can do the exercises that Dermot gave me. Like, I was laughing to myself when he said, you know, people have between 60,000 and 80,000 thoughts. Straight away my mind went, oh God, I hope I have 60,000 to 80,000 thoughts a day. I hope I'm not under or over, you know. So like, to a certain extent, nothing can kind of, I've tried to control my mind and control who I am for Jesus since I can remember, and most people try and do. And, you know, there was times where I wish I could have kept my mouth shut where I didn't. Yeah. But, you know, that's you. That's, you know, there is a certain amount of acceptance that you have to do. Right. That's you. That's who you are. But don't negate the fact that you don't have to go to Dermot. You don't have to go to a guru. That simple thing that Dermot taught me, that breathe in for 4 seconds. Simple. Hold it for 4 seconds and let it go. If you're under a bit of stress, you would be amazed what that can do.
You know, if this thing catches on, that fresh air might actually be taxed. It's free at the moment anyway. But,
well, didn't Cromwell tax the windows and the time?
Well, listen, we're going to leave it there. It's been great chatting to you. Really insightful, particularly in these tough times, David, just to get a breath of fresh air. So, Dermot, I was going to say, God, you should write a book, which you are. And it's called Mindful and it can be pre-ordered now on at easons.com. And thanks for that lovely, I suppose, 20 minutes there of solace and getting away from all the troubles and teaching us how maybe we can be better in ourselves. And Bernard O'Shea, the very best of luck to you, and thanks a million for chatting to us. And of course, Bernard's book is called Manopause, available as well in all good bookshops and bad ones too.
Email brendan@rte.ie.